This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. When a recession ends, that is supposed to bring back jobs. But workers may find the same jobs they lost in an economic downturn are not there even after the unemployment rate has bounced back. Brad Hirschbein is an economist with the Upjohn Institute for Employment Research in Kalamazoo. He's also the co-author of a study for the National Bureau of Economic Research on the Great Recession and the skills required in the new job market. Brad Hirschbein, thank you for being here.
Glad to be here.
So give us the thumbnail sketch here. What were you looking at in this study? What were you trying to find out?
So we began investigating how the skills of jobs changed over the business cycle when the economy tanked during the Great Recession and as it began to recover. And this question has been investigated a little bit by previous researchers, but a limitation has always been that we couldn't actually see what was going on within specific jobs, within specific occupations. Most of what previous research had found was that there was an increase in demand for occupations that we knew generally required more skill, more training, more education. So a lot of the impact was being found across different types of jobs. But there was an unresolved question of what was happening within certain types of jobs. And so we were taking advantage of a new data product by a company, and we worked out an arrangement to get the data from them that actually looked at the requirements within job postings for specific jobs, over 80 or 90 million job postings throughout the country before and after the Great Recession. And these data allowed us to actually look what was happening not just across jobs, but within jobs and for specific companies. And we found that when the economy, well, I should say, across different areas that experienced the recession differently, we found that areas that had a worse time during the recession, those areas, the jobs posted in those areas, had larger increases in the skills required in those jobs, whether it be education or experience or computer or other types of skills. And those increases not only happened right during the recession, but they stayed elevated for several years afterward, even as the economy began to recover.
So what we're talking here about here is not necessarily like we hear the story about someone who worked in a manufacturing job, and then that job maybe gets shipped overseas or it becomes automated, and then that person has to find a different sort of job to do, which may still be in manufacturing but require more skills. What you're talking about here is this is the same job before the recession and after the recession, but after the recession, you need more skills to do it. Is that what's going on?
That's what we're finding a lot of evidence for. And because the skill requirements are staying elevated for several years afterward, even as the economy is recovering, we don't think it's just a temporary phenomenon where a whole bunch of workers lost their jobs during the recession and are now all desperately trying to get new jobs and employers are just being picky temporarily because they can. Rather, we're arguing that there's a lot of evidence suggesting that during the recession, firms are actually changing how they do and what they make, how they make what they do. And by changing the amount of machinery they have, the layout of floors, how they actually combine workers and machines. And when they actually do this process, they need more educated or more skilled workers than they did before to do the same sorts of activities. So the workers who lost their jobs, in anticipation that they might get it back, it turns out that the skills they need to do those very similar jobs have now been increased. And if they don't have those skills, that makes it difficult, more difficult for them to find those jobs.
Are employers making these changes because of market forces which are requiring it, or are they looking at a recession as an opportunity to do things differently?
Both. It's that the recession is kind of catalyzing the opportunity and the timing for when they're going to make these additional changes. We know that the pace of technology has accelerated, it's continuing, but if firms can't really constantly adjust because that's just not feasible, it's just too costly. So they wait till there's a good time to do it when demand for whatever it is that they're producing is low, generally during a recession, and that's when they decide basically to clean house. They are letting go of a lot of their workers, generally ones that they think of are not going to be as productive once they actually increase their technology, adopt those new software programs or whatever it is going to be.
So this is a term that people have used. They've called it upskilled, that the job becomes upskilled, that it now requires more training, different types of skills than were required before. Are there certain types of jobs that you found where this was more likely to happen?
So that's another advantage of the data that we were using is that it allowed us to look across different types of occupations and across different types of firms. And we found that the prevalence of this upskilling was pretty widespread across a large variety of different types of jobs, including many in the middle, but as well as several high-end jobs, things that we think of normally also require a fair amount of training and experience. Even jobs that are in the top quarter of how much they pay, those jobs also increased their demand for certain types of skills. So it was pretty widespread. One thing that we were finding is that the jobs, generally the least skilled jobs near the bottom, those are the ones that were slightly more likely to have a temporary effect, where it was the firms kind of trying to take advantage of an extra bunch of workers who were desperate. Those effects went down a little bit, but for the rest of the jobs, the majority of them, it stayed elevated for several years afterwards.
Are some of these jobs ones that would probably be done by someone with a college degree?
In some cases, yes. So we found that there was an increase in the likelihood of any education or experience requirement showing up in the posting. But we also found that if we looked at the specific credential, for example, there was an increase both in whether a high school degree would be required as well as whether a bachelor's degree would be required. For jobs that typically require a bachelor's degree even beforehand, we didn't find quite as much evidence of increases in, say, a graduate degree.
You also have this broken down somewhat by geography. Are there some things that you can say about the types of cities or metropolitan areas that are more likely to be hard hit by these changes?
Right. So we were basically saying that different areas were hit differently by the recession for reasons that had little to do with pre-existing trends and what was going on in upskilling. And that's kind of how we're making the inference that we do in the paper. And we go to at length to show that that is in fact the case. But certain areas that were badly hit, it turns out that Grand Rapids was actually a more badly hit MSA or metropolitan area. And that may surprise a lot of people because Grand Rapids didn't suffer all that much relative to some other cities or areas that we can think of. And that's because we weren't necessarily using the overall level of how bad things got, but by how much it changed. And before the recession, Grand Rapids was doing very well. So even though it fell quite a bit and still remained better off than some other areas, that decrease in its economic conditions was enough to make it one of the more negatively affected metro areas.
Are we also here in your case, in your study, are you perhaps looking a little more at what this means for individual workers? As opposed to maybe the overall blanket economy, which may show one thing in an unemployment rate, are you looking at something different in terms of what workers are able to come back to jobs or have to find new ones?
Right. So one of the inferences that we can draw, the conclusions, is that if every area had been as badly affected as the really badly affected areas were, then of the 5.5 million vacancies, roughly speaking, out there right now, nearly a quarter of a million of them would have additional job requirements that they otherwise would not have. So for those types of workers who would normally be able to get a job without those additional requirements, it becomes more difficult. And one of the things that we have wondered, economists, over the past three recessions going back to the early 90s, is that each successive recovery in terms of the labor market is taking longer and longer for people to return to the labor market. And there are a lot of people who spend very long periods of time unemployed. One of the reasons for that that comes out of our paper might be that because they were let go during a time when firms were actually upskilling, the workers who were let go, if they didn't have those new sets of skills, then they had much greater difficulty of finding a job. And until they get those skills, they may also continue to have difficulty finding a job. So it's a mechanism for why that there's a jobless recovery. And there's a need for us to try to address these workers' concerns and give them sorts of skills or training, preferably before they even lose their job, to mitigate their circumstances.
One thing you hear when you work at a university is that a lot of people will go back to school when they have lost a job or perhaps when they're fearing that they might lose a job. Do you think that your study tells us that this needs to be more of an ongoing concern for workers and also for companies?
I think it certainly points in that direction. There's one sign among many, and I think that our paper is a pretty important one, that the need for increased training and an ongoing sense of lifelong learning is not just something that doctors and lawyers and other occupations that need to periodically get recertified, it's not just for them anymore. That people need to keep their skills up to date, and as a matter of public policy, we need to figure out how to make that happen for people who can't afford to do it on their own, and that's actually a good chunk of them.
Well, and that brings up an interesting point, because we hear a lot about worker training and retraining. But if you're talking about someone who is currently working a 40-hour a week job, and maybe more than that, they also have other responsibilities, family, et cetera. What sort of allowances could you make in public policy that might allow somebody to continue working and at the same time maybe get ready for the next job?
That's a very good question. I think it's generally in businesses' interest to try to promote increases in skill for their incumbent workforce, because there are a lot of costs of trying to find new workers with these new skills, and a lot of businesses spend an inordinate amount of time and money searching for the workers with those skills. And in fact, they complain often that they can't find them. So I think that there's a solution to be had with greater partnerships between businesses and local institutions of higher education, both community colleges and universities, to develop the programs that keep the workforces, their skills, up to date in ways that are good for the workers, for the businesses, and for the local economy.
But I'm also wondering if your study shows that when they do go looking for these workers with more skills, that they're finding them. I mean, does it seem to be that they are able to find people?
We do find limited evidence for that in the paper. There is some evidence. It's not quite a slam dunk, but it's suggestive that yes, after the increases in the demand for these skills appeared in the job ads, we do see that reflected in actual workers that are employed. And this was most prevalently shown in the reduction of people who are high school dropouts had a much harder time of finding a job than people with higher levels of education. And that stayed, again, for several years, even after the recovery.
What do you think this says to somebody who is currently in the workforce? If they're reading your study or maybe hearing this interview, what do you think is a takeaway that someone might have based on what you are saying about the changes in skills that might come about during an economic downturn?
I think that if people think that their job is secure, and again, not everyone does. I think there's greater awareness that job security is not what it used to be, but to be more proactive about it, and to the extent that you can, and be aware of other trends that are going on in your occupation, in your industry, of what skills are needed of people who are coming on, and try to explore ways in which you can develop those skills. And in some cases, that means actually talking to your employer or talking to other local organizations, maybe the community college, browsing what programs they have, but generally not being complacent and thinking that I have a decent job that pays me well, reasonably well now, and I expect to keep it. That security is only there to the next recession, if then.
Do we always think of this in terms of formal training? In other words, can somebody, you know, read a book or perhaps find some materials on the website that teach them something about their job they don't know right now?
Yes. It doesn't necessarily have to be through formal education, through a degree or a certificate even. It could be self-taught. It could be taught in your own time. It could be programs that an employer brings in, customized training. That's very common, even if it doesn't lead to a credential or cost you any additional money. So it's going to depend on the situation and the specific job, but all of these options for training and keeping skills up to date should be on the table.
We've heard a lot during the election season about divisions between, say, white and blue-collar jobs, college and non-college graduates. Are you maybe finding another important point here in what separates workers from each other, those who have skills and maybe those who are keeping up, as opposed to people who have one set of skills that they kind of keep in the workforce for a long time?
Right. So one thing that does come out of the paper is that this phenomenon is not just restricted to so-called blue-collar workers. It extends up to white-collar workers and service workers as well. The difference, I think, is that more of the white-collar workers have both the wherewithal and the proclivity to continue to invest and update their skills. Their occupations generally give them more leeway and encouragement and even funding in some cases to do so, whereas it has been less common in many of the blue-collar and service workers. And I think that's where a lot of the changes need to happen. In belief and expectation on the part of both the workers and the businesses. And I think some of them are beginning to realize that we've seen growth in sectoral partnerships between local businesses often and community colleges, where either the workers will take courses that the businesses will pay for, or the businesses help develop specific training that affiliates at the community college or even university help deliver. And so I think that is beginning to change, but I would like to see a change a little bit faster.
does this require more sort of public-private partnerships? In other words, you know, the government can do so much, private business can do so much, but they're more likely to have an effective program if there is some sort of collaboration?
I think so, yes. That's where a lot of the evidence is suggesting, both for the funding, but also for the effectiveness of the training. If it's just the government providing money, then it's not clear that the workers are going to know what skills to invest in or what programs to pursue. If it's just the businesses, it's not clear that it's going to benefit the workers in the long run, beyond, say, the next quarterly pay report. I think that it's when there's an involvement from both that the long-term investments can be made that are beneficial to all of the parties.
Is there also a potential benefit here for workers in being able to earn more money? I mean, we do know that, you know, wages have started to come up in the latest job report. But is there an argument that, you know, if your skills are keeping up, you are more likely to find those jobs where your wages are going to increase?
I think so. That's a difficult subject or question to answer, because most of the research has been kind of on the reverse, that if you don't keep up with the skills, it's more likely that your wages are going to go down. So certainly keeping them up to date is a precautionary measure to prevent your wages from going down, either because you have a wage freeze or you lose your job. It depends on the specific skills that you do invest in. We know that there is incredible reward to specific types of skills in the labor market, particularly if you have a combination of both analytical, critical problem-solving skills when it's combined with communication skills. You actually now need both to do really well. And that's true not even in, not necessarily just the highest earning jobs like managers and professionals, but it's true even for middle class or even working class type jobs, where having those skills continue to pay a dividend.
Looking ahead, everyone always worries that there's going to be some new technological advancement which perhaps makes their job obsolete, or perhaps does part of their job that they're doing now, which seems valuable, and now that's no longer there. Is the next downturn in the economy, and we know economies are cyclical and they always hit some sort of a downturn, is that likely to advance this phenomenon even more?
Yes, I think so. We one of the things that we actually look at in the paper is that the specific firms that increased skilling, upskilled the most in badly hit areas were also the same firms that increased their amount of capital, which we were using as an argument to that they were having increases in technology as well, possibly along the lines that you were suggesting. So it's a difficult question. I'm not sure, but I can say this, that one of the things that most people are talking about in terms of an occupation that is most likely to be automated is with self-driving cars. Truck drivers may be something that's obsolete in so many years. But I can say currently, job postings for truck drivers is one of the largest occupations out there right now. So the demand for truck drivers or people who could be truck drivers is very, very high, even though many people think that's going to be something that can be automated away. So we should continue to monitor things carefully and be aware, but I wouldn't place any bets just now on certain occupations being automated away. It tends to be a lot more complicated than people think of any given machinery or technology completely automating away an occupation.
But if we're going to think about that example for just a moment, the trucking industry, if you are currently a truck driver, if you are currently someone who runs a company which relies on the trucking industry, or if you're someone who actually owns a company which ships things via truck, what sort of things might you have, and maybe not necessarily that you're doing today, but they're in the back of your mind in terms of preparing for the day when maybe we will have self-driving trucks and we won't need truck drivers?
At the same time, if I were a 20-year-old planning on having a 40-year career in truck driving, I'd be really nervous. And I would be looking at other skills and making sure that I had a backup plan. So I think it's hard to understand what the pace of this is going to be. It's very difficult to forecast out 10 years, let alone 20 or 30. But yes, I think it's important to pay attention to what are the demands of the labor market. And fortunately, there are more ways than ever to keep up to date with that. Many actually community organizations and even schools, colleges and universities post information publicly, as does the federal government, about which occupations they expect are experiencing the largest growth, which skill sets seem to have the greatest rewards. And as we have more information that's being shared between educational institutions and state departments of workforce development, we're beginning to understand better which occupations, which programs, I should say, which educational programs are leading towards more secure economic returns.
But you also have to take all of that with a grain of salt, that we don't know what the next big thing is coming, and that what looks like a very good profession to get into right now, maybe in 5 or 10 years, doesn't look the same.
Right. I mean, the takeaway is that we should continually monitor things. You can't just look around and say, this skill is in demand right now, I'm going to invest and get a credential in that skill, and I'm going to be set for the next 30 years. That's not how it works. We need to be investing in which skills are likely to have a payoff in the short term, but we need to be monitoring those and paying attention to how the economy is changing, and have the wherewithal, I hope, to continue to invest in skills continuously, or at least frequently. And that, I think, is the big public policy question, is that our educational institutions, especially once we're already working, aren't really set up to deal with that. And that's increasingly going to be the reality.
Brad Hirschbein, thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
Brad Hirschbein is an economist with the Upjohn Institute for Employment Research in Kalamazoo. Links to the study that he co-authored on the Great Recession and upskilling can be found at WMUK.org. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.